You want him to speak? Can he speak toward me like that?
Right, the mic setup. He sounds really quite good.
Mm-hmm. He does. Okay.
Yeah, he can just speak directly to you, and this will pick up the sound.
Pick up sound. Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. All right. So you don't have to talk right into the mic. We can talk to each other. Mm-hmm. So and he. Well, I guess he'll give some. So he. You went to Belleville.
Went to Fort Belleville.
Okay.
Into the quartermaster.
Okay.
I was in Fort Belleville. Treated like a king in the quartermaster, delivering food, ran on the post and clothes. Yeah.
Right.
Like a king, like I was a general or colonel. And I've always wondered, I used to wonder to myself, why did everybody always take a like to me? What did I have on them? I used to watch, I had to look at myself sometimes. Down to Fort Bell, by being in the quartermaster.
So the nicest people don't know why they're so liked, because they're just being themselves.
The 31st Engineer was all colored at that time.
Okay.
The 48th Battalion was all white. After those boys in the 48th Battalion had seen me play ball out there with the quartermaster and found out I was a professional baseball player, I was the only one could go to the 48th Battalion. They would ask me to come over and get me.
To
those
what?
Those white boys.
To play with them?
To play ball. They always would play poker.
Oh, really? They'd
come over here and play some poker with us. Oh. I could go over and play poker with them. I was the only scholar to go over there.
They just, as soon as they found out you were a pro baseball player.
That's right. Because I was a ball player. Yeah. They loved me and I loved them. Hmm. And after 3 years in Fort Belleville, they said, well, we got to take these quartermasters and let them take some training. So they sent me to Camp Lee. They sent me to Camp Lee and put me in the 12th Regiment. I go to Camp Lee that afternoon when I get off the bus and everything. They sent us into... the captain and his first sergeant's office. And they said, William, we read these papers. We see you as a professional ball player. Said tomorrow, said this evening, we play in the 11th Regiment. And we never beat them. And the captain, I forget his name, white captain, he said, William, I'm going to catch this evening. He used to play with Syracuse in New York. He said, William, I've heard talk of your name. With the Nook Eagles, I told him, yeah. He said, well, I'm going to catch you this evening. We goes out. That afternoon, we plays the 11th Regiment. And we had, on that post at Camp Lee, we had 75,000 there. And everybody was out to see the 11th men beat the 12th. And I walked up on that hill, and I stopped them. We beat them about 4-0.
Really? 4-0? You shut him out.
I shut him out. Wow. That afternoon, that same evening, the ninth regiment, all they did, they had a entertaining club up there at the ninth regiment. They said, William, we're going to send you to the ninth regiment. You're not going to do no training. You're going to just travel all over the United States to different posts.
To pitch.
Just to entertain. They had boxers. They had singers, they had quartets, they had everything, and ball player, and even basketball player.
All right.
That's all I done
for 2 years.
Then they say, William, all soldiers got to have some overseas duty.
Okay.
So Sergeant Beale, I never forget his name, he said, William, he picked college boys had been to Harvard University.
Hold on a second. Oh, I didn't realize that. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said we were going to be ready, but I was waiting to hear. Okay. Okay. Great. All right.
He say, I'm going to pick these boys from Harvard University, Morgan, A&T, and Union out of Richard. He had to pitch 29 boys, men, to send them to ADAC to replace those 29 men was in the post office over there. So he said, well, he said, since all the men got to do overseas duty, I'm gonna send you along with them. I told Sergeant Bill, I said, I didn't finish college. I didn't go to no college, didn't finish high school. He said, well, William, with the talent that you have and the knowledge that you have, I'm gonna send you with them. So he said, all you don't know, they will tell you.
So where did you go?
He sent us on the 23rd, they sent us home. All of us could be home on the 23rd for Christmas Day, to Christmas. He said, the 27th, I want all of y'all to meet in Chicago, and I want you to catch a plane out to Seattle, Washington, where you're going to be shipped off to. We did. We stayed on Christmas Day, went home and stayed home to Christmas Day. He sent us out, where all of us met in Chicago. They sent us out west, to Seattle, Washington. And we was there. They had just bought a big Liberty ship in to ship us out on. But they said it was a bloke in the side of it. Now we got to stay there at Fort Lewis in Seattle, Washington for 19 days until they repair that break in the ship. Then they sent us out of there to Alaska. We get in Alaska. And because we can't be replacing those boys at the post office.
Because
that you
I need you to say it on the
radio. They wanted us to replace these boys, but we can't replace them. They sent them papers back to Washington, D.C. and had them changed. They said now we stayed right in Seattle, in Alaska for 2 or 3 days. When they sent them papers back, they said, well, we'll put them in the 364th inches. And the 364th inches, they had done so bad here in the United States, out in Wyoming. They put us in there. And send us on to ADAC. We get in at ADAC. Then they send us from ADAC after 2 or 3 days to ATU. That's on up going on around to Japan. So now, we was there, and all we had to do was unload the ships.
You went to Japan?
Yeah. When they sent us back to Seattle, Washington, back to Alaska, back to the United States, they asked me, said, William, said, how do you want to go home from Seattle, Washington? Do you want to fly or go on a train? I said, I'd rather go on a train. I'm tired of flying. So that's the way they sent me back to Woodville, Russell.
Tell me where you went from Alaska.
They sent me to Woodville, Russell. Back to Seattle, Washington, from Alaska, and from Alaska to Woodville to Seattle, Washington, from Seattle, Washington, back to Woodville Wilson in Stanford, Virginia.
Okay,
that's what they did.
Okay,
then I came home.
All right. Where did you serve overseas?
Overseas ADAC and ATU.
Okay,
and they were just about finishing up in Germany. We took a sightsee, view all of that on the way back down to, and y'all just had dropped this bum in Japan, and we settled a little sight of that and brought us on back because we didn't have to do nothing.
Right. Okay. Well, let's go back to the beginning, now that we're recording, and tell me about your birth and your family.
My family, my grandfather, Bob, he built a church. He built two churches at my knowing. He built a church, Twilight Baptist Church, in Halifax County. And then after that, people was crowded every Sunday. Then he built another church in Jarrett, Virginia, right out of Emporia. And people, they have his statue. That's been 6 or 7 years ago. It back up in that big church right in Jarrett, Virginia now. Big back, my grandfather.
Right. Was he a slave at one time? Or?
At his father. His father was a slave at that time. Because my grandmother, she was in the slave. She was a slave. And her mother was a slave.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they looked just like that. That's why at that time when I was born, 1914, you know, something had to be going wrong for my daddy to own that much property. Because most people around there didn't own nothing like that.
Really? So why was he able to own it?
Because back in slavery, most my people looked like they was white. Mm. We was mixed up.
Okay.
That's the reason why back where I come from in my day, most of those good white people around there, and it was a whole lot of them, they didn't call us black. That's where the word come from, colored. They didn't use that word, black, because we were so mixed up.
Oh, okay.
Did you ever hear that word?
No, and I knew that was the case in South Africa. I didn't realize it was the case here.
No, so when you were... Right. We were so mixed up. They didn't call us black people. They called us colored people. Mm.
Tell me about your father's farm. Now, that was in North Carolina.
North Carolina.
And now, your grandfather was in Virginia.
No, all my people were right in North Carolina.
North Carolina,
the little place that I called Gettysburg, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. We had 5 stores there. I remember all 5 of them stores. Mr. Souter, Mr. Collier, Miss Hawks, Mr. Joyner, and Mr. Ellis.
All the store owners.
All the little store owners there. For run the post office and the gasoline station and the little store.
Wow. Well, tell me about your family.
And my family, my mother and my sisters. My mother and my sisters.
How many sisters?
I had 7 sisters. When they grew on up, from a knee high on up, they were singing in the choir. My oldest sister, on down, was taught how to play the piano. That's the way it was handed down, from the home to the church.
Wow. And tell me about the farm. Yeah.
And our farm, 90 acres, we used to have at least every year, we used to raise over, I say, 10 or 15 cows. And around about 20 or 30 hogs every December. My daddy, would kill that meat, and they would can it up and salt it up, and that would last us all the way through the whole entire year.
Mm. That was a successful farm then.
I'm gonna tell you the truth. All the canned goods, my mother used to can. We used to have peaches all the year, from year to year. All the potatoes, all the beans, all the cabbages, and everything.
Mm. Tell me, in growing up there, what kinds of lessons did you learn from your parents about life?
Well, my parents, I never seen my daddy drink no whiskey. I didn't hear them. All they talk about was just the good things. They just talk about the church all the time, how you're supposed to treat people. Don't think evil. Think good. You'll live a long time. Don't do no more to your neighbor than what you would do to yourself.
Mm. Wow.
Because your neighbor's having a hard time, help pray for them. Your prayer will help. Goodness will always help.
So a lot of the things you share now, you learn from them, huh?
Oh, I learned it from my mother and my daddy and my uncles and aunts.
Mm,
nothing but goodness, that's right.
How did you get involved in baseball?
I got my one of my great uncles, Uncle Jim, on my grandfather, on my mother's father's side. He used to play ball. He was an Indian, and he used to play ball. And it's standing a little boy out there, 9 years old, looking at him play ball. Then I started to try to play. And then from then on, Uncle Jim taught me how. He learned me how to throw the curveball. He say, anything straight, anybody can hit it. But if it's crooked, you have to slow down. Just like these highways out here. When you get on a long, straight stretch, you can drive 100 miles an hour. But when you get on one of these crooked roads, you got to cut your speed down. All of the great players, Josh Gibson, Buck Leonard, Buck O'Neill, Jackie Robinson, they used to ask me all the time, say, William, can't you throw something else besides a curveball?
So that was your best pitch?
My best pitch. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Only time I will show you my fastball. Now, most pitchers, even up to the day, they'll try to hit you upside the head or in the own arm. I would always try to hit your Uncle Jim, tell you, hit him on the kneecap. If you hit him on the kneecap, you can put him out of position. So anytime those good baseball players would see me throw a ball low, they say, William, you got too good a control to pitch a ball, to be bouncing a ball up here. You throw that ball, keep that ball up. So I know you're trying to hit me. I would do it halfway smiling myself. I said, my Uncle Jim taught me that.
So they knew that you had good control.
That's right. Yeah. And one of my greatest pitch games I pitched in my life was in New York City, over in Meadowood.
Who were you playing with at the time?
I was playing with the Nook Eagles. We were playing the Homestead Grays over in Meadowood. And Buck Leonard, I'm saying this boy, Leon Day, was pitching. He had pitched a lovely game. He's dead and gone now. Up until that ninth inning, we got the Homestead Grays 2-1 in the ninth inning. He has two men on and two out. Pop Wilson come up and hit a line drive, hit Leon Day on the knee. He can't pitch no more. Two men on and two out. Josh, Dick London, he was our manager. He said, William, said, what you think we should do? I said, bring Hopgood in and let him pitch the call. Buck Leonard was coming up, and he could hit. He's a left-hand batter. I said, bang.
He was tough to get out, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was tough. I said, bang, Hopgood in, because he's a left-hand pitcher. Let him walk Buck Leonard. And let me pitch, with the bases loaded, let me pitch to Josh Gibson. Well, them people in New York, they thought Josh Gibson was God. And I come in laughing. I come across the third baseline, the boy run door and take my jacket. I come over, the whole 50 or 60,000 people stood up for Josh Gibson and booing and hollering. I'm laughing, Chuck. All I got my mind on, young Count Basie. You know, he had a good band. He's from Kansas City. Right. He was playing up in Harlem that night. And I knew I could dance. And all I want to do is dance for some beautiful girls.
You're about to pitch to Josh Gibson in the ninth inning with the bases loaded, and you're thinking about what you're going to do.
I ain't. He's just another man for them. My mind is on this dance. I comes in, and all these people hollering going on. And you know how Josh Gibson used to walk up to the plate. I ain't thinking about him. I'm thinking about young Count Basie. So, nothing to do, old Mackey catching.
Let me ask you, had you pitched to Josh Gibson before then?
Oh, yes, I had. Oh, a many times. Because he used to ask me, William, can't you throw something else besides a curveball? I shot him two curveballs up there and got him in the hole. And the whole crowd of 50 or 60,000 people, you could hear a pin out there. when I got two strikes on him and hadn't swung. Now I got him so confused, he don't know where I'm gonna try to knock him back off the plate or throw him another curveball. So I threw him another one, my breaking fast curveball. He had to lunge and hit it. Hit it to Willie Webb and shortstop, and Willie Webb throwed him out. Do you know, they had to escort me back over to Newark, New Jersey, cross that bridge. I couldn't go up to that dance that night by getting Josh Gibson out. I said after I got back on Newark, I wish I'd have let him hit a home run now. So I could at least gone up to the dance, good, huh? Because I used to love to dance. I didn't have no more habits. I never smoked. I told my mother when I was 9 years old, when we had a neighbor, to get burnt up. And you know them little huts we used to sleep in. And the people said, old people, because I was 9 years old, and old people didn't let children hear them talk too much. By hearing them around, and my sister said, you know, Mr. Jordan got burnt up because he was drunk. And I told my mother I was 9 years old. I said, I used to call her Emma, right by her name. My sister called her mother, and I called her Emma because I was so spoiled. I was a baby boy. I said, Emma, I said, I'll never drink. I'll never smoke. And I was nine, and I have never, up to this day, my three sons and my three daughters, I tell you, they never seen daddy with a fifth or a pint or drink on his table. And I was the first one when we was playing ball all over the United States. I'd be the first one after the game right in them nightclubs in New York City, in Newark, Philadelphia. And everybody said, William, you don't drink or smoke while you're in there. I know you're going to bring some old pretty girl in here. And I'm going to try to help get you drunk so I can at least feel her. I've had millions of people, them players used to laugh on it all the time.
So you were in the clubs, but you weren't drinking or smoking?
Never. I've been in every club practically in the United States.
And a lot of your fellow players, though,
they loved it. They loved that liquor. They loved that liquor. And I tell you, when I tell you about it, I say I was born and raised right down in North Carolina where the people used to make that moonshine liquor and cigarettes.
And grow tobacco. Yeah.
But I say, and I always tell all men, 9 to 90, make up your mind what you gonna do.
You tell me, how old are you now?
Or how 4 months, I'll be 90 years old.
When will that be?
And April the 26th.
Right. You've lived a healthy life.
I'm going to tell you the truth.
You think that the your healthy habits have much to do with your...
And the way you treat your own body. When I was in 1934, when Dr. Green was checking us for high blood pressure, and long then, we didn't know nothing about no diabetes or no cholesterol. When Dr. Green asked me, she said, William, said, do you have high blood pressure? I said, no, ma'am, I do not. Because you a pitcher. Do you have diabetes? I said, Dr. Green, I said, what you talking about? I said, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know no diabetes. Cholesterol. I said, I don't take no medicine at all. Right up to now, I don't take no medicine. So she said, back up, William, let me look at you. I backed up, and she looked at me, and she said, well, when you get in New York City, so I'm gonna start at Baltimore, Philadelphia, and New York City, and Boston, where all those good time people are, and especially women, don't let nobody take don't let them take advantage of you. Then I began to ask the older men, what you mean? I said, what the Dr. Green? And some of them older men who had been to New York City and was raised up around there, they would begin to tell me what those people would do for you. Liquor will ruin your mind. And those women will take the advantage of you.
The other thing I guess you've talked about is stress. Tell me about that, because it sounds like you've got a good philosophy about that, too.
Stress is one thing. Don't base your mind with your children? Are your nieces, neighbors, too much on one thing? You begin to notice yourself in distress at night. Watch yourself. For the last two or three nights, you had your mind on Williams. What you wear, you want to carry him the next day. You want to bring William down here. You didn't sleep too well. You want to satisfy William. You have him trying to sleep all night long. You didn't have sleep. Huh?
Do you sleep well?
That's right. And then after you begin to find out, but you say, he's a pretty good fella. He's nice. But the same thing you can do. If somebody in the family have done something wrong, locked up, police brutality, you get your mind on that, you ain't going to sleep. Who are you ruining? You ain't doing nobody but yourself. Give it to the man upstairs. What I mean, our Jesus, our God.
Let him take care of him.
Boy, I think about him all the time. Give it to him. Say, Lord, you take it.
So you try not to worry about things, huh?
Say, Lord, don't let me worry no longer. But if you keep on, word will kill you. I ain't no doctor, but I've seen so much happen.
Let me step back for a minute, back to baseball, because I want you to say a little bit about a couple of players, Satchel Paige and Jackie Robinson.
Satchel Paige. When I first met Satchel Paige back in 1934 in Newport, Virginia, he had a traveling team that he was traveling with. Just old team, ran on old truck, he was traveling through the country. Well, I pitched a game. I was about 20 years old in Newport News, Virginia. He was traveling all through the country that time, playing 60-40 baseball. And quite natural.
What is 60-40 baseball?
We play in here today. If the gate was at $1, if we made $100 in here, if you lost, we give you 40. I took the 60. That would made you play so good. And when I met Jackie Robinson, when Jackie Robinson was going to UCLA, he was a good basketball player, baseball player, and a football player. Bax Ritchie, he was trying to get some colored players into organized baseball. Jackie Robinson, what they done after they saw him play out there in UCLA in college, they said, what we'll do? They put a scout on him. Nobody knew it. They put a scout on him. They followed him 4 years through college. Nobody did not know it at that time. Now, they watch his attitude. Do you have a good attitude around home? Look, you got to watch your attitude. When he got knocked down in football out there, he got up and didn't say nothing. In basketball, somebody ill-knowed him in the nose, he never said nothing. On the baseball field, if somebody hit him with a ball in, cause old pitchers long then would hit you. He never say a word. The scouts notice all that. They take it back to Banks Ritchie.
Because that was going to be the kind of qualities he needed.
We got a quiet man. I thought in my mind, Tommy Sampson, played with the Alabama Blackbirds. He was one of the great I ever had seen. Second baseman. He could hit. He was same with Buck Leonard. Tommy Sampson could hit, and he could play that second base. So nothing to do. I say when they selected Jackie Robinson I used to strike him out like taking candy away from my baby. He goes up with the Brooklyn Dodgers and they can't get him out. Because always you would say then, it had to be a man upstairs and it wasn't nobody but Jesus.
Did you ever play against white teams?
Oh, yes, I did. Yeah. Oh, I what made a like? White team. Oh, it would burn. They used to be crazy about me. I've had a lot of white boys used to tell me when I was growing up, William, I wish you was white so you could play with us. I said, I sure do. That's right.
Because they liked you so much and you were a good player?
They liked me. It was like, I tell you, people just begun to notice, watch your attitude and like you. Because I used to say all the time, and I went into a dance hall in the place, and all those women want to dance with me and everything. I used to come back and look at myself. What's wrong with me, huh? And same way I was in life. Like yesterday when my wife and I, we was out. We went out to dinner, and we had to line up to so many people going in right down the law. And then the dude, this white fellow was standing up there, so, and he and his wife and his daughter. So every once in a while, he would reach back and hug and kiss her. Standing right close in front of me, just closer than you. And my wife was right here. So I say, this your wife? He said, yeah. I said, well, I'm gonna tell you, miss, you won't have to worry about, he looked like a man about 50 years old. I said, well, you won't have to worry about him too much longer, tell him to take his hand off you. And he said, I said, wait till you get my age. So she said, well, how old are you? I said, in 4 months, I'll be 90 years old. She said, well, I'll be glad when you get 90.
tell me about your wife.
No. Oh, she's sweet. Yeah. Out of all the women that I met, and God knows I met a many one, from coast to coast, in the United States and out of the United States, God, I ask my God every day, Lord, I'm glad you give me this girl. Her mother and father were just like mine. They loved that church. They loved that church. And you, when you see all the beautiful girls I had met, just like Lena Horne and all her cousins in Atlanta, Georgia.
You met Lena Horne?
Oh, man. That's the best part I've ever been. We played the Atlanta Crackers there in Atlanta, Georgia. So Lena Horne give us a party. Back in the 30s, Lena Horne give us a party. And she had all her cousins over. Well, you see the color Lena Horne, don't you? Well, them six or seven cousins of hers came to that party. Boy, you're talking about pretty. And just as kind and nice as he could be. And all of them want to dance with William. Fast as I turned one loose, the other one had.
Because you were such a good dancer.
Oh, man.
Tell me the teams that you played for. Because I know it was the Newark Eagles. Who else did you play for?
Philadelphia Star played some with the Philadelphia Star.
The who?
Philadelphia Star in Philadelphia. The Black Yankees in New York. And the five teams in Norfolk. We had the Tidewater Giants there. We had the Norfolk Star. We had the Portsmouth Firefighters. We had the Longshowmen. And we had the Belvoir Graves. Bishop H. Plummer owned the Belvoir Graves. He was the bishop of all of the, I forget the name of the little churches. Saints of God. How was the name of that church?
He owned the team.
He was the bishop. He was the youngest bishop. Colored bishop in the United States at that time, Bishop H.E. Plummer.
Really?
Okay. And I played with his team. Oh. He wanted to keep me there. Yeah. But after I met Mr. Whitehead in Kinston, North Carolina, he wanted me. He said, William, and begged me so. He said, you'll be close to home and everything. And I'll buy you a car if you come and play with me. The Kinston Brigade.
Wow.
In Kinston, North Carolina. Then I meet Mr. Highsmith out of Greensboro, North Carolina. He had the Goshen Red Wings there and the Greensboro Red Wings. So he worried me to death. I had to go up and play some with them. So they were passing me around just like you did.
And all this time you were pitching.
I was pitching.
And you were a pretty good pitcher.
I used to pitch two games a week. For sometime $1 or either $2.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you next. What kind of money did you make?
$1 and $2 for pitching a game. Money was a little sharp. But long then, and Mr. Joe Higgs, who had the Tarver Tigers in Tarver, he came out of a little old place called Lilton, North Carolina. Joe Higgs, I'll never forget him. He had a beautiful daughter. We now went on play with him. So what used to tickle me so bad, Mr. Joe Higgs, he said, William, I said, what? I didn't think he knew or thought I liked his daughter because I was young. She was about 22 or 21. He said, I think my daughter wants you to marry her. And I said, deep down in here, and I sure will marry her too. If I could get up, she was beautiful. I never forget Leome as long as she was a beautiful young girl. Yeah. But as I traveled around, I'd met so many beautiful, nice people and everything. You had to be good. When everybody talking about you and respecting you, there's one thing, tell me about respect and pride now. Do we teach that now?
What do you think? Do we?
From the home to the church to the street. I look around and then I take my mind off you. I say, look like some people don't teach that. But I say deep down in my heart, that's not for me to say or not for me to think what you're doing. That man upstairs.
Your wife was Methodist.
My wife went to Bowie State College. I'm gonna tell you the truth.
How did you meet, and when was that, and when did you get married?
In the 30s, by traveling with all them teams. They wanted going to Bowie State College. All college teams wanted to play some good team, so they wanted to play us that day. So we got a game with Bowie State College. And by me, had been around New York, you know, we think we smooth and slick when we get about. And dancing in them college, dancing down to Bowie State College that night, they'd give us a dance after the game. We beat them right bad, but they give us a dance and a dinner that night. Dance all like that. And I'm dancing, whether your thing, and she looked so good. I was patting on everything. She had a little head up on my shoulder, and I could feel a little heart beating. I tease about it right now, a little heart beating and everything. And I was telling her, I said, I could marry you, and I'm kidding. I'd had a lot of mouth feel. Thank God, I'd been up New York there for a little while. So, and I say, I'm coming back and marry you. She couldn't believe it, so I stayed in contact with her.
Had you done that before?
No, I wouldn't tell them. I was so afraid to tell most girls that. But there's just something about her I liked. I said, I'm going to come back and marry you. And stayed in contact with her. In 1936, I came back and married her.
Wow.
And I said to myself, and in my traveling, still traveling, we're staying with her mother and father.
So then she was Methodist.
Yeah, she was Methodist.
So you decided
it's like this. My people were Baptists, all men, and I couldn't see with their goodness. People used to talk about the Baptists is better than the United Methodist. The United Methodist is better than the Jehovah's Witnesses. I said, Lord, if you got a heart and believe in God, and that's your mind, you do what God tell you to do. Good spelled G-O-O-D. It don't spell G-O-D. That's God in him. You do what your mind tell you to do. And I see my wife's people are just like my people now at home. You got to respect Sunday. You got to give to God besides your working day, because he with you all the time. You got to take the one that you love. And all you meet, you can meet a million if you want to.
So you decided to follow her?
You will follow the one that God, the man upstairs. Don't never leave your mouth. Don't leave your mouth.
And then you moved up here to be
Moved up here.
And where did you move to?
I moved. Right on, when I come right on, move from North Carolina right on up here.
Okay.
That's
so,
right.
So then, and you continued to play, and then...
Ball, that's right.
All right. And then and you were traveling quite a bit. Traveling, what was traveling. That like?
And I would send all my little money home on in an envelope. You know, you didn't have to make or nothing. Put in a letter and send it home to her.
Was it a lot of travel?
Oh, yes. Mm. And send my little money home to her. And she wouldn't do no traveling. Mm. She stayed home with the little children.
Okay.
And raised them.
And then you were drafted?
I was drafted in the Army in 1940. And 1940 when I traveled. And when I told them when I came out of the Army, Campanella, Joe Black, and Gillum, I was scouted the same night for the Brooklyn Dodgers farm team. They were. I said, I'm not, or they word me to death. William, we paying, we gonna give them $7,000. I said, I don't care if you give them $7 million, I'm gonna stay home with my wife. Wow. I said, I've been with my wife and my children now for 5 years in the Army. I said, I'm gonna stay home with my wife. Campanella and Joe Black, they like to wear me to death. William, won't you come on? And Gilliam, I said, I'm not gonna play no more ball.
Is that Junior Gilliam?
Junior Gilliam. I said, I'm gonna stay home with my wife.
What made you do that?
Well, I tell you, when you got little start with little two or three little children running around the house like that, my father was always home with us. It need a man in the house. A woman can't raise no little children like that by herself.
How many did you have at the time?
I think I had about three at that time. Okay. I said, I'm going to stay home with these little children. And they was crazy about daddy.
Oh, so you didn't want to be away from them either, huh?
No, I didn't want to be away from them. That Junior and Gillum and Campanella, like, wait a minute, William, come on, William, what? You going to, I said, yes, I am. Got me a job making, I think it was $39 a week.
A lot less than the Brooklyn Dodgers would have paid.
What you talking about? What I? And that's what they were talking. Man, look, all that little bit of money. I said, look, I was taught you can make $5 a week if you put it to good use and give it to the right one. It will be taken care of and go a long way. But you can't do it. Not in your pocket.
That's good.
Because no soon, don't care how much a good a man make, from a preacher to his digging to his audience in the church.
Yeah.
And some old pretty woman standing beside him paying for her dinner and things like that, he lied that he might run his hand in his pocket and pay for it.
What was the job that you got?
Jura Venetian Blind Service. I had never seen a Venetian blind. And I went down there, it was nine of those people in there. One of them said, I ain't gonna work if you hire him. They wrote him a check right then.
Why did he say that?
Nobody know but the man up there. One of them said, if y'all hire him, I ain't gonna work in here.
Because you were black?
Uh-huh. They wrote him a check right then at Jura Venetian Blind Service, 525 Dale Drive. Right across in front of Blair High School. Then I started working now. William, you go to work at 7 o'clock and you're off at 5.
Now you didn't know anything about this work.
I didn't know nothing.
But they hired you.
They hired me. I go in there and I washed Phoenician blinds, washed them.
Now, let me ask you, how many years had you actually played baseball?
I played baseball from the time I started playing baseball when I was just only 18 years old.
And how many years as a professional?
And professional? 3 years of a professional. Mm-hmm. 3 years.
But about, what, about 20 years altogether?
Oh, yes, years? Yes, yes. Because long then, when I was a boy growing up, we didn't have nothing else to do but play ball in the country. What else was in the country? Some wicked person might open up a beer garden for you to go entertain yourself. Yes, I would be the first one there sometime because I could at least dance by that old piccolo. You didn't never see one. You're too young to know about the piccolo. You put a nickel in there and play a record. I'd be the first one there sometime. But I never drink no beer, no wine, no whiskey, no nothing.
Still could enjoy life and dance. Huh?
That's right. That's right.
So you went to work with this Venetian blind, and then where else did you work beyond that?
When I worked with them for about 10 or 12 years, from the 40s up until the 50s, Montgomery County School Board, they started opening up a retirement for the maintenance men. My wife told me, she said, buddy, if I were you, I would go with the Montgomery County School Board. I said, Blanche, I said, sure. I said, I've been with Mr. Jepson too long. She said, but look, you're going to need that retirement when you get older. So 2 or 3 days around there, her and I, we talked about it. And Mr. Jepson and all the people in there were so good to me, you hate to leave them. And they treat me like I'm one of them. So finally, she kept on after me. So I said, well, I guess I will go with Montgomery County School Board. So I started with Montgomery County School Board there in the 50s. For that retirement, when I got older. And when I go there, after I take the little tests and everything, and pass the test, they make me plant operator. Now, a man got to go to college for 6 or 4 years to be an engineer. But the Lord upstairs would be, I take this little test, and they said, William, we're going to keep the contractor with you for a while. I pass a little test. They give me a good mark on the test. And they send me back to Springbrook, with these 3 great big boilers down in the basement. And when I was going on down the steps looking at them, I said, Lord, what am I going to do with these 3 big boilers? Here come the instructor down. And he said, William, so what, it looked like you were afraid? I said, no, I'm not. Not too much. He said, well, look, you see this little cutoff glass? You know, all the big boys got a little cutoff glass on them. He said, you see this glass here? I said, yes, sir. He said, when this glass, you come in here in the morning, and that water is down in that glass called maintenance. He said, now your electrodes down there, he said, if you pull them out to clean them and they got a hair, they won't start. You pull them out to clean them and they got a hair line causes them. That hair line just causes them not to ignite. So I said, thank you. He said, now, but I haven't told you all of it. He said, you see that air compressor over there in that corner? I said, yes, sir. He said, that's the baddest thing in you. I thought the boiler was the baddest thing. He said, now what I want you to do for that air compressor? Every morning, come in here and bleed it. So no air, no damp air will go around through the thermostat.
So you kind of learned on the job there.
Huh? I learned right on the job.
Yes.
By him telling me. Okay. 1 year, they wanted to make me, about 2 years after the head man got sick and had to send him away, they wanted to make me head man. We got 26 people there.
So how long did you work there altogether?
I worked 22 years. So when they made me supervisor, over 22 people, I had to go to Rockville and take another test. I took that test. They gave me 96 on it. They said, William, you know how to treat people. And those years that I worked with those 26 people, 11 women and 15 men, I never wrote up nobody.
So you were a good supervisor.
They will tell you right now.
Tell me about your family, the kids you raised.
My children and raising them. I never had a moment of trouble out of not a one. My 3 sons and my 3 boys. Now, my 3 sons.
Your 3 sons?
My 3 sons. Now, you know they retired. Mm-hmm. Walter, 37, from Montgomery County School Board. Tommy, about 34, 35. Kevin, from the federal government. He had about 30 or 35 with federal government. My 3 daughters, I got a daughter work with the federal government. Been with them now. She never made them but A's all her life. Dr. Silver Lee. And Jeannie, Dorothy, I call her Jeannie, her middle name. She teaches school, but she's been teaching about 30 years now. She got her master. My baby Debbie got her bachelor. She teaches school.
Wow. So they were really successes. You did a good job.
I'm going to tell you now. That's right. They do.
You're still a close-knit family.
Oh, I'm going to tell you the truth. I wouldn't give nothing in the world for them children. And they're children. And my neighbor's just as good.
Yeah. Tell me about your involvement in church.
In church? I love it when I go to church. I love to sit back and listen to them sing, and the preacher preach, Reverend Dr. Mill. I love to hear her preach. I love to hear the choir sing. Walter, he sing in the choir out there. Calvin, you know what he is. You know what I mean? Tommy, he's a young digger up to Resurrection Church.
So church is very important in your family,
then. Oh, my God. You know what I mean? If you don't have some church, if you don't have some connection with church, you can't hardly make it in life. Church, if you think, don't be too quick in your mind and in your thought to explain, start thinking about something wrong. Leave it to the man at best. God, take it in hand.
That's worked for you, huh?
That's work. That's right. You can't straighten out them problems.
Okay.
It takes God.
You made the right decision to stay home.
Huh? I did. I made the right decision to stay home to raise these six children.
Do you look back and?
I look back and I thank God every day of my life. Lord, look what you've done for me. My wife tell me all the time. She said, "Buddy, all you do is just talk about yourself." I said, I ain't thinking about what y'all say. I'm thinking about me. What God have done for me.
We live in a real mobile society where a lot of families have split and gone in different directions.
Could you tell me why? Sometimes I look at them and then I take my mind off you.
You've lived in the same home for how long?
I built that house in 1946 when I came out to Harmac. When the man got through nearly the last boat on Wednesday, Friday I gave him his little $375. And that's where I raised all six of them right there.
And they all live pretty close to you.
Good food. Good clothing and clothes and shoes on their feet and 10 and 15 cents in their pocket. Asked all of them.
There's a lot of love in your family.
Oh my God. Love, you can't beat love. Love mean a lot in a family. But like you say, I look at a lot of these people and I say, Lord, it's not none of my business, but I can just look, Lord, let me look how some of these family reunion. This one don't like that one don't like that one though. I said, Lord, I love everybody. My wife all the time at me, she said, Buddy, how come you can talk to everybody? You can talk to white like you do black. I said, because I got love in my heart. I said, I'm gonna tell you something good. I'm gonna tell you the truth. I said, I don't down nobody from what you're doing and that what your mind tell you. I used to look right in New York up there and New Jersey and Philadelphia. Back in the 30s, all them little sporting girls on the street. I used to, 14, 13, and 12 years old out there. I used to look at them, run up to me and ask them, Mister, you want, I'd run my hand up and give them a quarter and keep on walking. Wow. Most of the team would say, William, how do you do that? I said, cause I got seven sisters in my family.
Wow. Do you follow baseball now?
Oh, yes, I do. But how come y'all paying these ball players so much money now? I see in the papers all day where you're paying one baseball player $72 million for just 7 years. And you signed another one here the other day, $23 million for 3 years. I think about like this. I started to think about, I said, now, our school teachers, everybody had to be taught what they know. Why can't we pay our school teachers that much money?
What about the old Negro League players? A lot of them.
It's not but a mighty few living. Wilbert Field, he keep me in touch with everything going on. Wilbert Field, right down in Chilham, Virginia. Wilbert Field.
A lot of them are kind of struggling, the ones that are left.
Most of them is dead and struggling. And I look at our ball players, our young ball players, where we used to help to play, like Willie Mays, Hank Earn, Willie Sarger, Ernie Banks. Why they blow that money so quick? Millions of dollars. We got a lot of baseball players, athletes. I would say good athletes. And they're about on the welfare with the money they've had. But everybody can't handle that dollar.
They learn how to handle.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. You got to give it to the one in the house, and I tell most families, white or black, you got to let the one handle the money if you want a good home and a good living, where I know how to handle the money. Most men I've seen in my lifetime can't handle that money like his wife can. You treat her nice and right, she go protect everything.
Yeah, that's good.
She gonna be asking about things. You in the house, you ain't asking. Every time she go out, if she got money in her pocket, she gonna buy a curtain, or she gonna buy a pillowcase, or she gonna buy something. You ain't gonna do it.
That's good for it. I think we might be done. Are we done?
Okay. Yeah. All right, sir.